Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the meeting of the Audit Committee on Wednesday, 26th of June 2024. Before we start, it's with great sadness we learned of the passing of Councillor Mark Aykroyd on Friday evening, and obviously our thoughts and prayers with his wife Patricia and Mark's family at this time. As all the committees have done since Mark's passing, could I request all members present to observe a minute's silence as a mark of respect? Thank you. Thank you, everybody. And as I think we've all said over email in the last few days, Mike really will be missed, and conscious that his colleagues in the Conservative Party will particularly be feeling his absence. So, thoughts with you guys as well. Okay, we've come back to the agenda. Item one, apologies for absence. Could we receive any apologies for absence, please, Dan?
Thank you, Chair. We've received apologies from Councillor Hadley.
Thank you very much. Declaration of interest. Do you, Councillors, have any declaration of interest to declare on the items under discussion tonight? No, thank you. Item 3, urgent business brought forward under Rule 12. I'm not aware of any urgent business for consideration at this meeting. Item 4, questions from the public. We haven't received any questions from the public. Item 5, questions from members of the committee. We haven't received any questions from members of the committee. Item 6, public minutes of the previous meeting on the 14th of March 2024. Any comments on the minutes? No, in that case, I propose the approval of the public minutes from the previous meeting. Could I have a seconder, please? Councillor Hudson, thank you very much. Now I go to the vote. All those in favour? Any against? Nearly. Abstentions? Councillor Krupski. Votes carried. Thank you. Item 7, appointment of a vice chairman. Councillor Bailey was the vice chairman. She's now left the committee. For the appointment of the Vice Chairman for the ensuing year, I'd like to nominate in a swift motion Councillor Krupski. Do I have a seconder for that? Thank you. Councillor Slater? Any other nominations? In that case, we'll move to a vote. All those in favour? Any against? Abstentions? Thank you. You got this down. Okay, item 8. So, internal audit outstanding actions. We've got 22-23 homelessness and 23-24 Stronger Towns Fund. Thank you for coming tonight, Tom. I invite the Head of Regeneration Development to provide an update.
Thank you, Chair. Good evening, members. So, the first outstanding action relates to procedures for the management of homelessness debt. So, this is something that's been picked up in the forthcoming update to the Council's recovery and write-off policy, which in itself is subject to an executive decision, and that will be coming forward imminently for approval. So it's captured by the processes for sundry debt write-off as part of that, and so the action will be marked as complete at the point when that policy is approved. So that's the first one. The homelessness action plan, so the homelessness strategy was approved in December last year, and that includes action for the prevention of homelessness. So we've considered that action to be complete as well. And then on the Towns Fund, there's three actions under that. The first two of those, the procurement register and the governance structure, these are things that are in place. Internal audit have naturally requested evidence of this as part of the completion of the recent review of the Towns Fund. And so a completion date of July has been put in for that to allow time for that to be provided and scrutinised accordingly. And the remainder item for fraud risk is, we don't consider it to be a Towns Fund specific risk as such, but rather something for the Council as a whole. So Lloyd and I have been discussing about how this is treated, and he might want to just give a sort of summary explanation on that.
Thanks, Tom. Yes, I think the original finding was recommending the development of a fraud risk register for the Towns Fund on its own. So this was identified before I started at the authority. Since starting, I've had a conversation with Tom and with internal audit colleagues, and my recommendation would be that as we've already got a risk strategy and risk management processes in place, so we have operational risk registers in service areas and we have a corporate strategic risk register, it wouldn't seem sensible to me to also develop a separate fraud risk register. It should be part of the risk registers that we already produce on an ongoing basis. When we get to it later on the agenda, the work plan, you'll see that as part of the work that's coming to committee this year, we are looking at updating our counter fraud and corruption arrangements. Once we bring those to committee in February, we will be implementing a series of awareness raising sessions across the council. So there's a session for audit committee in March on the work plan, but there's also then sessions around fraud risk awareness across the council. And coming out of those sessions, we would be asking people to identify any relevant fraud related risks for inclusion in their operational risk registers and for escalation if necessary to the strategic risk register. So that's the process we're now proposing to go through to identify fraud risks that relate to the council and to incorporate those into our existing risk registers.
Thank you, Lord. Just going to conclude by saying, have to take any questions, Chair.
Thank you very much. Over to committee. Councillor Zank.
Thank you, Chair. I'm very happy with the approach, completely happy with the approach. What would just be helpful for you is if the minutes could reflect any of the revised timescales in the minutes, so that we know come the next meeting or the meeting after that whether we've hit them or not hit them, would be just helpful.
Yeah, I think that's a good suggestion. Yeah. Any other questions or comments?
Councillor.
So that report was updated. We received a final audit findings report in relation to both of those years, the 21-22 and 22-23 audit process. So we have received updated final audit findings reports for both years.
Thank you. Thank you, Lloyd. In that case, we'll close that item there. Tom, you're very welcome to stay, or you're very welcome to go.
I appreciate the invitation, Chair, but on this occasion, I'll leave you to it.
Yeah. We won't hold it against you. Thank you for coming, Tom. Okay, moving on to item 9, the work plan. So Dan and Lloyd have drafted the work plan. It's distributed to members for their views. I think it's a really good, clear, comprehensive, and it covers all bases as far as I can see. I think it allows us to be much more proactive, which has been one of my key issues over the last year or so. One thing that I wanted to get a view from committee on, and I made myself unpopular with this, is around the training. So the training was originally scheduled to be immediately before the meeting. So if we're looking at a statement of accounts in September, we'd meet at 6 o'clock, have the training, and after 6 we'd go into the meeting. My only concern on that is that David uses time to scrutinise the paperwork. So if we do the training immediately before we then go into the scrutiny, we've not a chance to look at the papers. Discussed it with Lloyd and with Dan. The concern about doing that at the previous meeting, doing the training at the previous meeting, could have 4 or 5 months in between meetings where we might have forgot the training, unless your memory is better than mine. So the suggestion is that we have a meeting maybe a month before the full audit meeting where we do the training. I know we don't need more meetings, any of us, but I felt that would give us that sweet spot where we've got time to do the training, look at the paperwork, come to committee and discuss the item. But I appreciate that it's an extra meeting. My thinking was we could do it on Zoom, so for the toxic cabal that we've got going here now at committee, we don't have to travel over, and like the usual training, maybe we could record it, and people who can't make it, they could watch it afterwards. But I'm happy to take a view on that.
Training going to be one where we have to, or we don't get it?
I don't know what the council rules are on that.
I don't believe it is one that you'd need to attend. They are more awareness raising sessions. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. The formal requirement is the actual committees themselves. So the idea of the training sessions is to raise awareness to, for committee members so you can more effectively scrutinise, raise questions. But as the Chair said, if we're recording those and you aren't able to make the sessions themselves, the recording will be available, so you'll be able to go through that. And you know, there will be the opportunity to raise questions afterwards once you've been through that recording. If you aren't able to make them, you can take those through down to the relevant person who's delivered the training.
I think, especially for the new members of the committee, it might give us that time to be able to develop the skills, look at the paperwork, then discuss it at committee. It could be something we review for next year. If it's the same membership of the committee and we feel we don't need that, we can just come at 6 o'clock, do the training, give us a refresher, and then come back to them. Maybe we don't need to do it next year. But I thought this year might be a good move.
Chair, if I may, I suppose we may also be able to review it throughout the year. So if we start with the process you just suggested and it's not working, that's not... doesn't stop us changing the work plan and moving back to in-person meetings ahead of committee.
Yeah, completely agree. In that case, I don't know if any other questions on the work plan. Councillor Cuppy. No comment.
When we're talking about training, in general training, all the years that I worked, that's quite a few, it was always addressed as career development, and I'm a little bit concerned, along with others, of the seriousness with which we take to the only emergency that this council has declared itself to be in, which is the climate change one. Now, since then, which was 2020. When that was voted on and passed, things have deteriorated a lot. Now, if we take away all the political mumbo jumbo and what have you, what is apparent is that all the promises that have been made, we're failing. We as a humanity are failing to get near. So it is going to come, there is a point in time which is going to come where this emergency raises itself to such an extent that we go into a panic situation. I would rather not that happen. I have grandchildren, I have children. I don't know whether it's going to affect my grandchildren, I don't know whether it's going to affect my children. I, for one, am not going to sit idle while I see things worsen.
I understand the point, Councillor. Is this something you want to add on to the training plan?
Is training sufficient? I would rather see career development of officers. I understand that elected members need to understand what they're asking for, but I also think it's more important that officers have the equipment to respond to what is necessary, not what is just asked. So I'd rather see the training emphasising career development in the fields that our officers are skilled in at the moment.
Well, I think we can do both, and I imagine that happens under the HR function. It's probably not for this committee to oversee that, but I take your point that both are important. But in terms of this work plan, we're happy to sign it off. Yeah.
So far, yeah.
Okay. Thank you. And thank you both again for all your work pulling it together. Sorry about this. We can check my agenda. I've got item 10 as the audit plan. Should it be the audit report next? Yeah, that's no problem. So in that case, I'm going to hand over to Ruby and Tracy for the internal audit opinion. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. So the report in the papers today is our Head of Internal Audit Opinion and our annual report detailing the work that we've undertaken across the year for the 2023-24. So in terms of the opinion, if you look on page 3 of the document that gives you the summary of where we are with the opinion. So pleased to be able to say that overall we have been able to give a significant assurance in, and that the framework for governance, risk management and control arrangements. In terms of that opinion, we have then broken it down into three areas. So we've looked at, we've undertaken work during the year around the strategic risk register and strategic risk management. Pleased to be able to say that's significant assurance. There were some recommendations that were raised and agreed during the review, and they're ongoing. Two of those at the moment in relation to updating the policy, and then the one has been implemented in terms of the content of the risk register. Then the second area is the outturn of the plan. I'm pleased to be able to see overall that's significant assurance. I would draw your attention to there was one review that was moderate assurance within there, and there was also a limited assurance. But overall, the majority were significant assurance. And then the third area, on this occasion, we've provided moderate assurance overall because we aren't quite where we'd like to be in terms of the recommendation tracking. At year end, it was at 62% of the actions that were implemented. So, but I know a lot of work throughout the year and towards the year end has been undertaken to progress those. So we should see an improvement going forward with those. I'll pause there in case there's any comments on the opinion part of the report.
Yeah, thank you, Tracy. I just want to pick up a couple of things. One, really positive that we've got significant assurance, especially in those first two areas. The only bit that made me wince a little bit was the first follow-up implementation rate, 21%. I know you put in there that next year we'll be focused on that. I just wondered if you could expand on how you might do that, so what kind of steps you might take to focus on that first follow-up rate and how it could improve.
Well, we have a process that has been implemented through partway through the year, really, in terms of ensuring on a monthly basis that the report, the trackers going into a report and that's being shared with all the heads of service. I think it's worth just reflecting on some of those recommendations were dates that perhaps were agreed in historical prior with CW audit, and I think there's more emphasis now going forward with all the managers and heads of service around the action tracking dates to make sure that they are actually realistic and achievable.
Could I add to that as well, Chair? I think the evidence is here this evening. So Tom came along earlier on the agenda, and I think that the process that we've started since the start of this calendar year anyway is when internal audit colleagues bring along their update reports to committee and there are actions which aren't being implemented in line with the original timescale and there isn't a reason for that, committee has been asking the relevant head of service to come along and give you further assurance about why and what they're doing about that. So that will help with the improvement in the implementation rate going forward as well. So your continued challenge of heads of service when they haven't implemented their actions in time will support the fact that they know they've got to implement them and that there's an outcome in terms of them being asked to come here and hold themselves to account if they don't.
Thank you, Lloyd. Thank you, Tracy. And then to the colleagues. Councillor Sankey.
Yeah, I must admit, I was surprised at the numbers. They look very, very low. And I've got sort of two. You put generally sound. Now, that didn't seem, compared to what we've seen on lots of things, significant. How far down the list is generally sound? To me, smacks have been quite low down. Am I misreading I haven't seen the scale of what's...
That is the best we can give. It's prescribed wording that we have to use within our...
Oh, no, I understand you have to use the words. Same as Ofsted uses it, good and... But I understand the word, but in the sort of five or whatever number of rankings, where is it in that sort of list? Is it near the bottom or is it just below significant? I don't really... Am I making myself clear?
I can say in terms of as Tracy said, it is prescribed wording they have to use, but that means it's good in effect. it is good. It's a positive outcome in terms of the wording that they can include within the report. It is a positive outcome.
The key is the significant assurance element of it.
So that's the bit that can change. That's the offset bit.
That's the
significant assurance.
Yeah. And the 62% that we've got there, what was it like in the last few years of the year? What was the last few years? Just so we can have a comparison. But what was it like the previous year? And et cetera, as a percentage of...
I don't know.
We haven't tracked it this way previously, so it wouldn't... We wouldn't have given you an overall percentage. We would have had the actual numbers. So the way the CW used to report the action tracking was very different. We didn't have.
I understand you've used a different tool, and I understand that. But in the CW's process, they did have a set of actions for which they completed X of Y. I could do the maths of X divided by Y to work out. So, and I just wondered from percentage, because 62% seems low of what we said we were going to do. We've only done 62%, which implies 38% we have not achieved, which doesn't feel great from the point of view. For whatever reason, it might be external influences, etc. But I just don't know whether, you did say it's going to get better, but what was it before?
Has
it dipped, or is it just slowly improving? I just don't know.
We don't have the historical analysis, but we can definitely go away and look at that and bring you back to a future meeting if you'd like that.
I think that'd be good. So the next meeting is September.
Yeah.
Maybe that could be a sort of rolling total that we keep an eye on.
Yeah.
Right.
And again, on a similar note, we've got one high-risk report here. What was that like in previous years? I'd just like to just see how well feel. Are we on a sort of steady street? We're doing well. We just got, so one, what was the previous year? Was the previous year 2, 3, 4, or was it 0 high risk?
Too moderate the previous year.
Yeah.
Two moderates in the previous year, in 2022-23.
So we didn't have any high risk the previous year?
There was
no limit.
That's what I thought. I was just checking. I didn't spot any of it.
In terms of the limited assurance reports, as I said, we have agreed, and it's in the private agenda for this meeting, but we've agreed at previous committees that for limited assurance reports that will be reported in full to audit committee. So again, similar to the actions that haven't been implemented in line with the timescale that was agreed, audit committee can ask for further assurance on those limited assurance reports. They can ask the relevant head of service to come and hold themselves to account again. But it's what further assurance for the limited assurance reports would you like, and also what can the committee do to help internal audit with moving those findings forward?
I like to sort of see the trend, and I don't know whether it sounds like the trend, just my gut feeling from what I read is the trend isn't improving. It's trending. Now I don't know whether that's because you've had a new set of auditors and we're doing things differently, or it's genuinely more complex than things. It could be a range of things, but I'd like to know what the trend's like, rather than just a snapshot. And it doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel good from my snapshot reading. I don't know if others think the same, but
I think we can definitely monitor this, as we suggested, for September. The thing I would say, I don't think we should get too far away from the fact we've got significant assurance in the report.
Yes, but we've also got generally sound.
But I'll reiterate that is a good outcome. So last year's head of internal audit opinion was significant assurance and generally sound system. Generally sound means internal audit haven't tested everything, they're not able to test everything, but from the things they have tested and the findings they've found, it's generally sound from what they've tested, noting they aren't able to test everything.
So it's a sample,
effectively.
Councillor Huckabee.
I'm not really sure where the boundaries actually stop me from thinking. Now, if that 21% is based on, as we've got one failure in another area of lack of resource or lack of people on the ground being able to do the job, then that asks the question. Now, if I look at Japanese management techniques, five whys, ask five whys or ask why five times to each of the answers that you've given to the previous why, and you get to the root problem. Just looking at 21% really doesn't help us at all, except if we brandish a stick at Lloyd and say that unless he improves it next year, you're going to get six of the best, mate. That is not the way that we should do things. We should analyse why there is a failure, if it is a failure, what the causes are, and we should look to solve those causes. It may be that we can't, and we have to put them on the back burner for a period. Now, if I may suggest that one of the contents of this report is associated with the town board or the town fund, where certain things have been put on the back boiler. One of the things that we discussed at a previous meeting was risk assessment. I couldn't find anywhere where the risk of misinterpretation of brief was taken into account. So if you've got a brief in front of you, misinterpretation of that might lead you off in a desperately wrong direction, which you shouldn't have been on. You should have been going another direction. Now, that causes problems in several areas. It certainly causes problems in Lloyd's back garden because everything is associated with finance. It leads to problems elsewhere, like the credibility of the council when we're going off in the wrong direction on a scheme and what have you. Now, that town board, and I shall go blue in the face, but I shan't stop saying it, that town board definition or the guidance or the prospectus was not interpreted correctly. The board decided or missed the point that it was the economic and productive regeneration of Burton. The productive and the economic was dropped. Now that has led, well, within the 21%, I would bet you that some of that is aligned with that misinterpretation. Now, I don't know where to discuss this. I don't know whether the council wants to discuss it. I don't even know whether the audit committee wants to discuss it. But it is there, and somebody has spotted it, and other people are attempting to forget it or move on. Now,
I think the starting point for that, Castle, could be a conversation with
the main point,
cabinet member and the chief officer.
Yeah, the main point, though, is 21% of what? And we need to know what that 21% is and what the causes of it are. And as an audit committee, we should be on top of that.
I completely agree. I think the steps we put in place this year and that Lloyd's put in place, like having chief officers to come in to give updates on those limited assurances, that will help solve some of that. The question about the town's fund, I think that's a question for the cabinet member and for the officer for that brief. Mm. Any other questions at this point? Should we come back to Ruby and Tracy, or do you want to take that now? Yeah.
The second part of the report is our annual report, so it's showing the KPIs that we've monitored against. Pleased to be able to say that all but one have been met. There is the one, and that was as a result of some delays in receiving information, but it was unforeseen circumstances that resulted in that. So, overall, pleased to see that we have been able to meet the KVI. So.
Thank you, Jason. Captain Sackett, do you want to come back on your point?
Yeah, it was actually... there's a lot of very good stuff there. But one thing I just caught my eye, and I looked at your analysis on responses of what we think of a client satisfaction compared to what your other clients think of you. And I just wondered why we don't think as highly of you as the other clients, or have I misread it?
Councillor Sankey, page 9 was
page
that.
Page 9.
So the highly satisfied and satisfied.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at that, it's 60-odd% highly satisfied, and then it drops. Yeah. I mean, all of them are satisfied or highly satisfied. I'm not saying the same people are complaining about the same. I'm just saying, just looking at that, there is a noticeable difference of satisfaction between the other clients and ourselves. I just wondered, just as an aside, why we're not as satisfied as the other clients. Have you analysed the reason why? Is there any particular reason why? Is it just me being...
Could come back and say, well, there's slight green, we have neither satisfied or dissatisfied, but we haven't had any of those ratings. Mm-hmm. So it's subjective to those individuals that have completed the responses. So
lovely answer, just like the forage. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much for the report. And again, it might be a really positive report with significant assurance. That's great. Moving back to the agenda, staying with Tracy and Ruby for item 11, the internal audit plan for 24-25.
Thank you, Chair. So the plan puts together, well, first of all, if I just explain what liaison and cooperation, and in terms of March and April, we have been liaising with Lloyd and other heads of service and the Chief Executive in terms of potential areas for inclusion in the plan. The plan has then gone as a draft to the corporate team, management team, and that was signed off in April, wasn't it? Mid-April. So it's coming to yourselves here now as a draft for your consideration. In terms of the areas within the plan, we have looked at the corporate plan and the strategic risk register at the point of bringing the plan together. So we have linked it within there so you can see what areas link back to all of those key risks and areas in the corporate plan. And we've also considered what we would need to do in order to provide our head of internal audit opinion. So those are the core areas that we would indicate in the plan for you. And then the risk assessed ones are, as I've touched on, what we've looked at in the risk registers and appropriate. So we're looking at the total level of days are the same bottom line as it was for previous year, but obviously the areas have changed. Within the appendices you will see there's the strategic plan, and that shows you the breakdown across the 5-year programme. So there are things that we wouldn't do on an annual basis, but it would be reviewed within that 5-year plan process. So I'll pause there and see if there's any comments on the content.
Thank you. I had no comments, and I thought it looked really good, really sensible and straightforward. Colleagues, any questions? I'll let Councillor Austin go first.
Yeah, in the areas requested by council officers, which we haven't included, so I think there's two important things there that we really need to look at. One is waste management, because there are plans for a different way in which we collect the brown bins coming probably in the next few months, which I think we need to keep an eye on to see has it been successful in if it's implemented. And the other one is section 106 agreements. Now, bearing in mind what happened last year where £400,000 was given back to the developer, I think it's important that we keep a better eye on what's going on with our section 106 agreements, and I don't want to get into the situation where we're desperate to spend the money, don't, and then lose it. I do not want to be in that position again. Thank you.
I don't know if you guys were here for that. So the previous administration had a situation where the section 106 money wasn't spent in time, we ultimately had to give it back to the developer. So that's the context behind that.
In terms of those two points, I think the first one was waste. So you'll see, I think Tracy referred to Appendix B, which is the strategic audit plan. So that shows all areas that have been or are due to be audited over a 5-year period. So waste is in there in terms of it was audited last in 22-23 and it's due to be audited again in 25-26, which in terms of the point you picked up, Councillor, with changes to some of the services, I think 25-26 is probably the better point to pick that up in line with that five-year plan, because that if those changes go ahead, they'll be live at that point. Sorry, section 106, could I just that bit as well. So there is a risk, you're quite right, in terms of we did hand money back last year. I think we are still improving our actions in terms of monitoring section 106 funding. So again, it's probably, whilst there is a risk, it's probably not the right time to review that again there. I'd rather put the improved actions in place and then have a review from our internal audit colleagues next year to make sure we are as robust as we can be, or if there are any other recommendations that they would give us in terms of further improvements. But we have got an interim resources started with us this week who's looking at pulling together the information that planning hold in terms of all the agreements and that finance hold in terms of what goes into our statement of accounts and what we use as budget setting to make sure that's up to date and it's one version of the truth and it's aligned across both those departments. So that is work we're doing now, and again, I think, as I said, it would be better to perhaps review that again next year.
I agree. We're is section 106 in the cycle? Is that got a due date at the moment?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'd be keeping to the plan for both of those. Councillor Tankiva.
I'd asked me questions about the Ward Enhancement Programme, and I see we've got down there as under item number 12, Shared Prosperity for the Ward Enhancement Programme. I wonder if you could just elaborate a little bit, because they were wanting to make sure that the money is appropriately spent on the things, so the processes are in place to do it. Is that, I'm just trying to be clear on what we're actually doing in this particular quarter two stroke three.
The governance processes in terms of this, rather than a value for money and how the money is spent.
Right, so they were concerned that the processes of when we've agreed to spend X with whatever, that we do actually have the due processes in place, that money is spent on those items, and it is, there's an audit trail, for want of a better description on that. And it was just, that was raised with me, I said I'll raise it tonight. So is that going to be covered in this?
There's two parts to it, if I might. So I think what internal audit colleagues will look at is governance arrangements generally for UK SPF, which would include what's the process for agreeing an award. So have we got sound governance in place around that? So when we get something coming in asking for it, how do we go through a process of then awarding it, and what controls have we got in terms of once that's paid, follow-up?
So basically a level playing field. If a boxing club asks for it and a wrestling club asks for it, they're treated equally the same.
I get that. But I suppose the more detailed part, so do our governance arrangements work effectively? Are there any improvements we can make is what internal audit colleagues will look at. We've got a national process in terms of the grant awarding body and evidence we have to provide to them in terms of the items that you've just set out, Councillor. So have we got evidence back to the people we've awarded the money to that they have spent it in line with what we've awarded it for? So we've got that local process in place already, and we have to, based on spot checks, we have to provide that evidence to the national awarding body as well.
Right. So if a councillor wanted to know, have we done it right with X or whatever? I don't know particularly. They didn't mention what particular one they've got concerns about. But is that, could they actually come to you, Lloyd? Or
it would be to Tom, who was here earlier. So he manages that. Kelly.
So go to Tom and say, can you convince me that we're doing it right on
X? We've got appropriate records.
Okay, I can go back on that one. Thank you very much.
No problem. Councillor Slater is next on the floor.
Sorry, just going back to 106 monies. I thought Councillor Hawkins had decided we're going to publish a record of 106 agreements on the website so everyone can see it. I mean, that's you're not aware of that, are you?
So we will be. So planning holds the information in terms of section 106 agreements, the actual agreements that are in place. So I'm not sure whether that's been published yet, but I'll certainly follow that up after this meeting to make sure it is being published. I think the risk for me at the moment is the one that Councillor Hudson identified, which is, are we on top of the deadline for spending that money? are we tracking that we've actually allocated and spent that money and we're not at risk of running out of time and handing it back to the developer? So there's two lots of records we keep at the moment, one in planning around the actual agreements themselves and then one in finance in terms of money we've allocated, money we've got left to allocate. And what we need to do is join those two together so we're not at risk of handing money back, and that's the work that's ongoing at the moment.
I mean, forgive me, I'm just a little bit surprised because I was asking this question, I thought, a while ago now, Aaron, and I seem to have got the impression that it wasn't a question we should have asked because the officers are already on top of this. And the fact that the incident you talked about, the £400,000, was known about before, and now it seems there's some kind of doubt that we're not. So I'm confused, to say the least.
I'm not sure that there's doubt as such. The lawyer's putting actions over the next lawyer
yeah.
8 months.
I suppose the background to this is when the money was originally paid back, there was a piece of work done at the time to review all of the funding we'd received and make sure we weren't at a trigger point in terms of handing money back. That's only good at a point in time. So rather than having to keep doing that at different points in time going forward, we're making sure there's a joined-up process. So it's a shared document between planning and finance that's live. It's one version of the truth that we both keep and we jointly share. So we don't have to keep doing that on a periodic basis. It's live at every point in time.
Yeah. Okay.
Councillor Krupski.
Thank you. Chair. Sorry, can I just, there's another point, but I'd just like to pick up on the joined up part. I don't see there's a need for the joined up part in terms of finance, because at the end of the day, you're advised, and tell me whether I'm totally wrong, may well be wrong, how much the amount is, fruition dates, etc. So I presume finance are only interested in that detail, not the detail replanning.
There's two elements to it. As I say, the detail that planning keep at the moment are the full details of the Section 106 agreement, what the developer has agreed to commit, what scheme that relates to. So all the items to do with planning. You're quite right. From a finance perspective, we're interested in how much is the developer due to give us, at what point in time, and then tracking what decisions the authority has made to utilise that money, and are we using it in time, and we're not at risk of handing that money back. So the two things are, so finance don't own the planning the Section 106 agreements, planning do. So it might be, we're not aware that, you know, if we've not got a joint pile that we use, we're not aware of a new planning agreement, we're not aware that we're getting towards the deadline for receiving and using that money. So we do need to join up the information that planning hold with the information that finance hold. And as I've just said, rather than doing that on a periodic basis, normally at the end of the year, because we have to put a figure in the statement of accounts, we want to do that on an ongoing basis as a live document that we both share and both update.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I always raise caution in terms of that, because you have two stalls, and I think you know where I'm coming from. Just a question for Lloyd, really, in terms of both internal and external audits. You may have covered this. It's partly to do with this, but partly not. In the staff appraisals or assessments, annual or quarterly, whatever they are they linked in any way to the results of issues raised within both internal and external audits?
In what way? Do you mean if there are findings by internal or external audit, would they feature in someone's appraisal?
Well, if you have issues raised in either of the audits, it clearly is the responsibility of either individual or department heads. Are those then linked in to their assessments for the next quarter or the next annual appraisal?
Yes, the process. So in terms of the process, they should be, yes. So certainly for my own appraisal, I know we had findings of our previous year's audit. So when we've had the audit findings report, So they formed part of my appraisal to say I need to make sure that I've implemented those findings in this financial year. And similarly, where we've had internal audit reports with findings that relate to my area of service, they feature in my appraisal to say make sure I've implemented them in time with the deadlines that we've agreed. So yes, they should feature in people's appraisals.
But does that also include other departmental heads?
It would do, and it's a golden thread. So my appraisal obviously was undertaken by the Chief Executive. He would be doing the same with the other heads of service, and they should flow down to their service managers and the managers and staff below them.
Thank you both. Councillor Cubby? Might that's your spreadsheet?
That list doesn't exist because, you know, to be plain and simple, your responsibility over the finance includes what happens to the money that would otherwise have come to the other projects that were cancelled or have to be put back because of the loss of that money.
Certainly. So we at the moment, as I said earlier, we do that at every point in time. There isn't a live document that I can look at today and tell you exactly how much we've got to allocate. We've got that at the end of 23-24 because we've just produced the statement of accounts, so I know how much we've got on the balance sheet in terms of money we've received and not yet allocated or spent. We haven't got that ongoing live document, which is why, as I said earlier, we've had someone start with us on Monday to put that in place to make sure we have got a live document that if planning update it and they've got a new agreement, we get sight of it in finance and we're aware that the clock is ticking. Now, if we allocate that, so we go through the budget process and there's a scheme that comes forward funded from some of the Section 106 agreements that we've received, we can update that spreadsheet so planning are aware that it's been allocated and we're utilising that ahead of the timescale for it. So we've got the information at points in time at the moment, but what we will have over the next couple of months is that as a live document that's continually updated. I'm covering a point I was going to raise later on the agenda in relation to the statement of accounts, but you will be aware that, like most authorities, we have got ongoing resource issues in a lot of our professional services, including finance, and so we have got significant vacancies at the moment. We are trying to cover those with interims, we are trying to recruit to those, so we've been successful over the last few months in recruiting to a lot of them. But there are things that we need to improve in terms of our internal financial processes, so we are looking at where we can bring in additional time-limited staff to put those additional assurances in place and make sure that we don't lose money that the council has received. We've got a range of improvements that we are using additional staff to implement. So the cost to the council, there's a one-off cost. We improve the process, we don't lose that money going forward. Yeah.
Thank you. The system sounds really positive, Lloyd, so thank you for putting that into place. And for the record, I think the coffee's more than adequate here. But I'm a cheap date, so maybe not the best person to ask. Any other questions? Okay, brilliant. Thank you for that. So we'll move on to, I'm sorry if my numbers are out now, I think item 12. The Public Executive Decision Record, again, is with Ruby and Tracy.
Can we just have it minuted that it's actually a formal approval for the plan and the internal audit charter?
Oh, I'm sorry,
that's okay.
That's my fault, yeah, no problem. Do we need to take a vote on that? Yeah, okay. So do I need to propose we accept those? So I propose we accept those, seconder? Councillor Timms first. All those in favour of both items? That's unanimous. Yeah. Sorry, that was my fault. Yeah.
Can I just check, Joe, where we are on the agenda?
Yeah.
I think next I've got the annual treasury management plan. Yeah.
Okay. It's on to 13. So I think it's just myself that's got a different agenda. sorry about that. So on to the annual treasury management report. Yeah. Sorry about that. Annual treasury management report.
Thank you. That's me. So the report provides an annual update on treasury management activities for 23-24, and in line with regulations, it is a requirement that we bring this to audit committee after the end of the financial year that's just ended. The report itself provides an overview on a summary of our performance against the treasury management strategy for the year, the council's treasury position at the end of the year, our borrowing and investment position, an update on the economy and interest rates that's been provided by our treasury management advisers, Link Asset Services, our compliance with treasury limits and prudential indicators, and also any other treasury matters that we need to bring to your attention. In summary, the report confirms that we've complied with our treasury management strategy throughout the year and highlights sound performance in terms of the level of the council's external borrowing at the end of the year and the fact that we've reduced that by £4.5 million during the year. It also highlights the council's underlying need to borrow, so the capital financing requirement has decreased during the year, and the capital financing requirement overall remains above the level of total external borrowing that we could have borrowed, so that indicates that we have an under-borrowed position. We've not needed to borrow as much money as we could have needed to borrow for the capital expenditure that's taken place. Investments at the end of the year stood at just under £50 million, and average returns across the year were 5.03%, and that was in comparison to an assumed investment return rate when we set the budget of 3.7%, which obviously reflects the changes to interest rates we've seen throughout the year. The recommendations for audit committee are set out at section 10, and they ask the committee to obviously review the report and to make any comments or observations before we then report this on to full council in September.
All right, thank you, Lloyd. Any questions? Councillor Zanke.
I was under the impression it wasn't going to July, and the report actually says it's going to July council meeting. You just said it's going to September.
Apologies for that. So the report is incorrect. It is it's not yet on the forward plan, but it will be on the forward plan for September. I've updated that with Dan this morning. And the reason for that is there isn't now time for this report to go through the groups before the council meeting in July. So we want to make sure, obviously, Conservative group and the Labour group both have sight of this before it goes to council, as we would with other reports. So it's due for the September meeting.
Yeah, thank you. A couple of other points. The average rate of investment return that was the indicator was 3.7%.
The budgeted.
Yeah, the actual was 5.03.
Yes.
Is there a reason why that particular variation is quite a big variation?
So when we set the budget, and we do the same process every year, we set the assumed investment rate based on our advice that we receive from our treasury management advisers at that point in time. So they give us a forecast going forward of what they believe at a point in time changes in interest rates will look like. At the point we set the 23-24 budget, there was an assumption that interest rates would start reducing during 2023-24. That's actually not happened. Interest rates ended up increasing across the year and haven't reduced by the point we got to the end of the year. So it is just an estimate at a point in time. Obviously, you know, they can't see the future. It is based on their professional judgment.
I was just wondering how it compared with the previous. But the other thing, when I was reading the report, are there many differences between, in the main body of the report, between this year's one and last year's one? What are the sort of key ones? Because I was struggling to find a lot.
So we don't normally reflect on movements between the years, because treasury management activity is very difficult to do that, because
I was expecting them to be the same, very, very similar.
So it's similar in that we comply with all of our treasury management requirements and that we've met our prudential indicators, which is what we did in previous years. The level of cash that we've got available to invest is different to the previous year, because it's based on the cash flow, the money we get in, where we decide to invest that, when people pay their bills, if we decide to repay loans during the year. So for 23-24, we did repay a loan of $4.5 million, which we didn't repay any loans in the previous year because none were due for repayment. So it's quite difficult to look at financial figures between the years, because they will always be different for different reasons. But in terms of performance and meeting our prudential indicators, we've continued to meet them.
Yeah, I was just looking at, we were very happy with the last year's one, and I accepted that the actual start and finish numbers are going to be different. I couldn't see any reason why, you know, if it was the same, and there's no reason to change it. And that was the message I was trying to get. If we were okay last year, it appears very similar, except for the obviously start and finish carry forward. Except then I couldn't see any significant change in strategy from last year to this year, and therefore, if we approved it last year, there's no reason not to. It was a non-issue as far as I can see.
And certainly that was reflected. No, not at all. Certainly that was reflected. So when we brought the Treasury Management Strategy for 24-25 to committee in February, there were no changes to the strategy that we recommended. And it was the same the previous year. So you're quite right, Councillor Sankey, in that there's been no changes to our practices. We're not recommending any changes. And if there were any that we recommend, we'd obviously bring those to committee before we did that.
And I think that's worth actually noting for the minutes, that we've got a consistent strategic approach over a number of years that says this is the way we're doing things, and we're happy with the results, and they always say that we're happy with the results. So I just thought, just check it out, Mr. Thank you.
Methods, accountancy methods are usually the same and tested in millions of different places and what have you, and there is a definable similarity between them. But what there is a difference in is the emphasis of individuals that take a view of the relative prudence of certain initiatives, investments, losses. You know, this is why we spend a lot of time recruiting what is probably one of the better finance officers that we've come across in the process after the last one's left. There is going to be differences there, though. There's going to be differences, not big differences, but differences which are almost not measurable, but more to do with personality rather than you know, 1 + 1 = 2. That always will be the same until we move into another dimension. We can say the methods are the same, but it's a different set of circumstances which that person has to address using the skills that he's been that's on his CV that we've liked and recruited him for. There are differences. We've spent a lot of money on cost of living crisis. We've spent a fair bit of money on WEP, although these come through grants and what have you, but there is a difference in emphasis on the distribution of certain assets that we have or resources that we have. So it's a complicated mishmash, I know, and only the people who are close to will be able to see the nuances and the difference of what goes on. But
just my comment.
Thank you, Councillor Huckabee. Any other questions? Okay. That's just a comment, Lord. You don't need to vote on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, great. Full support, I think, on that, everybody. Moving on, I'm giving up with numbers now, so the name of the item. So we've got Corporate Strategic Risk Report 23-24 for Q4, and that's coming back to Lloyd.
Thank you, Chair. So the report provides an overview of corporate and strategic risks facing the authority at the end of 23-24 and the actions being taken to manage those. The report does note that there's been no movement in the current risk scores during the quarter, but it also highlights the work that will take place in 24-25 in line with the work plan that we looked at earlier and in line with the update from internal audit to further review and update the risk management strategy. So the items identified in that we want to build into the updated strategy, just to remind members, one was to incorporate a risk appetite. So in essence, that normally sets the higher limit that is acceptable to the authority for risk scores. So if items are above that score, the appetite would say you need to manage them a bit below that score. The other thing that we identified to bring in from the review by internal audit was a target risk score. So rather than just looking at your current risk score, we've got a target. So that's driven by that risk appetite and where you're trying to get to. You've got a target risk score, and that should help with risk owners in saying, well, I'm above that target risk score. I obviously need to implement further actions to get myself down to that target risk score. I think because we haven't got those two items in our risk templates at the moment, there's less emphasis on risk owners identifying further actions to get to a score, an ultimate score. And I think that is supported by the fact that there's been no movement over the last quarter. So whilst there's been no movement, there are actions we're taking that will help to drive movement going forward. And the other thing the report highlights is the fact that we're also looking at additional support that we can put in place to help risk owners to review their risks and the actions that are required on a more detailed basis on each quarter. The recommendations are set out at section 12, and we're asking committee to note the updated risks and to note the further work that will take place during the year to improve management and reporting of them.
Great, thank you, Lloyd. And we've got, I think it's the September meeting, review and update the strategy, don't we?
Yes. Risk. Yeah.
Thank you. Any questions? No? Okay. Brilliant, thank you, Lloyd. Staying with you for pre-audit statement of accounts 23-24, this is an oral update.
Yes, thank you, Chair. So, unfortunately, the verbal update here is because we haven't got a physical set of pre-audit statements of accounts to bring. So regulations for members, regulations normally require that an authority publishes their pre-audit statements of accounts, so their draft accounts, by the 31st of May each year. Because of the, and it was mentioned by members earlier on the agenda, but because we've had an elongated process for closing the 21-22 and 22-23 accounts, which was only finished in March, it's given us limited time to actually focus on drafting the 23-24 accounts. And the other point to note, as I again mentioned earlier, is the fact that we've got 27% of the posts in the team are vacant, certainly were at the end of the year when we had to produce the accounts. So those two issues together have impacted on our ability to meet that deadline. Accordingly, in line with regulations, we have therefore published an update on the Council's website to advise of that delay and the fact that we are aiming to publish the pre-audit statement of accounts by the end of June. So we have now drafted them, I've got them, I'm working through them at the moment and feeding back to the team in terms of any final changes we need to make. It's a 124-page document. I'm on page 54 at the moment. So I will get there this week so we can get those published. The issue with that, other than not bringing the pre-audit accounts to this committee, so whilst it's not a legislative requirement to bring pre-audit statements of accounts to committee, it is good practice. And our next meeting is not until September, where from the work plan you'll see that the post-audit statements of accounts are due to come to that committee. So to make sure that committee members have a chance to see the pre-audit statements of accounts, we're recommending that as soon as they are available and published, we circulate those to committee members electronically. And on the work plan, one of the training sessions that we talked about earlier is scheduled for August, and we want to focus that on both the pre-audit statement of accounts, so giving you the opportunity to raise any questions you've got on those, because it's not come to committee this evening, but also to provide you with some awareness training around statement of accounts, the main areas and the things that you might want to focus your scrutiny on. So you can do that with the pre-audit accounts, but also with the post-audit when we get to September. So it's an apology in terms of not meeting that deadline and not bringing that pre-audit statement of accounts to you this evening, but the reason for that and what we're proposing to do about that. I think there is, before I close and ask for any questions, there is one further point to note, which is the fact that this isn't necessarily just a risk that will relate to the 23-24 statement of accounts. I think you will hopefully remember earlier in the year the government undertook a consultation about the fact that there are delays in local government audits across the country, and they proposed a series of backstop dates to close the accounts going forward and get us back to a normal statement of accounts being audited by the end of September each year. So whilst the deadline for, or the backstop for closing the audited statement of accounts each year reduces in timescale back to September, by September 28th, the date for publishing the pre-audit statement of accounts hasn't been amended each year. It stays at the end of May each year. So there may be a point where, so for 23-24, the backstop date for actually completing the audit is the 31st of May 25. So whilst we're planning to bring those to the September committee and complete the audit, we could see the same delays we've had in previous years. And if we don't actually get them signed off to that backstop date, that will obviously have an ongoing impact in terms of producing the pre-audit statement of accounts next year. So that's not something that's materialised at this point in time, but it's something to make you aware of in terms of potential risks of ongoing delays with publishing the pre-audit statement of accounts in future years as well. So I'll stop.
Thank you, Lloyd. I think no one wants to miss a deadline, but I think we need to reflect that you've been operating in pretty exceptional circumstances for the past 6 months. I honestly thought 6 months ago we'd be sat here tonight talking about the backstop for our two sets of accounts, and we're not doing that because of the work that you and your team have done. My only question is there anything committee can do to support you? So I know we've got a plan for this set of this statement based on sending to colleagues and then the training session. Is there anything that we can do moving forward? You talked about the pinch points that might come in future years. Is there anything that committee can do, or is that not with us?
So at this point in time, so the audit process is due to start the week commencing the 8th of July. So at this point in time, there's nothing that external auditors have found that committee would be able to help us with. But if there are things that we could use the support of committee for, obviously we will highlight those at the relevant time. The other point in terms of resources, so just to give you an update on that, after I joined in January as 151, we had a deputy 151 post vacant. We've now recruited, so we've got an interim in, but we've recruited to that on a permanent basis. They start on the 29th of July. Underneath that, we've got three principal accountants. One of those was filled on a permanent basis. The other two were filled via interim arrangements. We've now recruited to both of those principal accountants. The vacancies we've got left now are for our trainee accountants. So at the moment, we've got two members of staff who have just finished their Association of Accounting Technicians qualification. We would be looking to go through a process and advertise. We've got three trainee accountant posts, so we want to advertise those, hopefully retain the people who've just finished their Association of Accounting Technicians qualification so they can go on and train to become chartered accountants. We would then have, if that's successful, one further chartered trainee post that would be vacant and two new AAT trainees that we would need to bring in. So we've done this on a tiered basis and worked our way down. We've been supported corporately to do that, so both the portfolio holder and the corporate management team and the leader are supportive of the approach that we've taken, and we are seeing fruition in terms of that process now. But again, if there are any issues with trying to finalise those remaining posts that audit committee can help with, obviously I will bring that to your attention as well.
Okay, thank you, Lloyd. Over to colleagues.
Just a very quick one. Did I mishear you say there was a 27% shortfall?
27% vacancies in the team at the moment.
So, a quarter of 10, because I heard that and I thought, that sounds a lot.
Yeah.
But the words that you've presented of what you've got, you've recruited, didn't give the same. Yeah, being short by 27% sounds a lot.
Yeah, we're talking small numbers.
Whereas your narrative gave the impression it's all under control.
We're talking small numbers of staff. So we've got 12, excluding myself, there's 12 full-time equivalent posts in the team. So in essence, we've got 3 vacancies, which is the trainee chartered accountant post, and if the 2 AAT trainees are successful in filling the others, we'd have 2 trainee Association of Accounting Technicians posts. That's the point. That's the situation at today's date. Obviously, that's not been the point. The situation over the last couple of months. To get to that, we've had to fill some of those other vacancies that I've referred to as well. So it was higher at a point in time, 27%.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Councillor Huckabee.
So every year there's 2 statements of accounts that we have to publish. There's a draft statement of accounts, a pre-audit. So the regulation is that we should aim to produce that and publish it for public inspection by the 31st of May each year. That's always a pre-audit statement of accounts. So it's based on the work that's not been audited that the finance team do, and it goes out for public inspection, and the audit process then starts and it's audited. And normally, in a normal year when we haven't got backlogs nationally with local audits, the audit process is meant to complete by the end of September, come to audit committee with the findings, and we then publish our post-audit statement of accounts. So there's always 2 statements of accounts each year. What we haven't hit at the moment for the 23-24 financial year is the deadline for publishing the pre-audit statement of accounts by the end of May. So we've put a update on our website to make people aware of that and say that we're aiming to complete that by the end of June, and the public inspection would then start in June as would in July as would the audit process. So the statement of accounts in itself isn't the document that informs the budget setting process each year. So the budget setting process, whilst we will take some information from the statement of accounts around money that we've got available, reserves, in the main, council shouldn't be using their reserves to set a budget on an ongoing basis, because that's not sustainable. The way we set the budget is based on an estimate of our income for the following year. So what will we receive from government in terms of grants? What are we likely to charge in terms of business rates, council tax? What are we likely to receive in terms of fees and charges that we raise? And then from an expenditure perspective, what do we think it's going to cost to run the council in line with the administration's priorities? So the setting of the budget isn't based on the statement of accounts. as I said, we will take some information from there to look at flexibility that we've got, cash that we've got available that we could use to support the budget, but that's not sustainable, so we wouldn't want to use that money to do that on an ongoing basis. We go through a process of looking at estimated income and estimated costs, which inform the budget process. So it's separate, very separate to the statement of accounts, which is our actual financial position at a point in time, and it's only ever at a point in time. It's a snapshot at a point in time.
Councillor.
Lloyd, you're like a captain with a tanker that's just veered off and you're getting it back on course, aren't you? We've never been in this position before. Are there any sanctions that could be taken against us for not doing it?
No, there are no sanctions other than from a professional perspective. It's not something that I've ever been late with either. As I said, I think they are exceptional circumstances in that we've had 2 years prior accounts that we've had to obviously finalise and close along with the resource pressures. So there's no sanctions on the council itself in terms of potential fines, but as I said, from a professional perspective, it's not something that I cherish.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions? And again, I'll take that point, Lloyd, but thank you for all your efforts in everything you've done to move. I think the committee has moved on a long way in the last 6 months, so thank you for all your efforts. And as I said, I completely understand the circumstances surrounding this. So anything the committee can do to support moving forwards, then bring to us. Okay, next item is reporting of write-offs from 23-24 quarter four. This is a new item. Lloyd's pointed out, as one of the improvements, that it's best practice for write-offs to come to audit committee. For whatever reason, in the last year, and I think possibly before that, that hasn't been coming, but it's now be a new standing item in effect for the committee moving forwards. However, for this meeting, we've had advice from the monitoring officer, and due to the rules surrounding PIRDA, he's recommended we defer this item for the meeting in September. So we'll hear this item in September, along with write-offs, if there are any, for quarter one of 24-25. Any questions? Thank you. The next item for the final item for the public part of the meeting is the date of our next meeting, which is 25th September 2024. Provision will have a training session in August, which we'll agree the date for and send around for statements of accounts, pre-audit statements of accounts. Okay, we now have one item to consider in private. Guess I'd have to read this out of the tape, don't I? In accordance with Section 100A4 of the Local Government Act 1972, the press and public be excluded from the remainder of the meeting, as it is likely, in view of the nature of the business transacted and the nature of the proceedings, there will be disclosed exempt information as defined in the paragraphs of Part 1 of Schedule 12A of the Act, indicated in brackets for each item number on the agenda. Do I have a seconder? Councillor Krupski? Yeah, thank you. Go to the vote, all those in favour? Unanimous? I'll wait for the many members of the public to leave.